Hi, this is Colin McCallan. Thank you for listening. Please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. Thank you.
Welcome to Is This Legal? Here are your hosts, attorneys Colin McCallan and Russell Hebbets.
Hello one, hello all. My name is Russell Hebbets, and I am here from sunny Denver, Colorado, coming to you with my partner, Colin McCallan.
Hi, everybody. It's been a long time. Sorry for the, I guess, break, hiatus.
Yeah, it's been a minute. We have been extremely busy. We've had some trials that have taken up a lot of our time. I had an unfortunate COVID episode that kept me sidelined for a period. So we apologize. We know you guys have looked forward to these.
And we've been getting mail in droves. It's like the Miracle on 34th Street. Like bags of mail are coming every day, basically, with just like little envelopes filled with pieces of paper. When are you guys coming back?
Right.
A couple have said, we hope you're not coming back. But you know what? We don't worry about those people.
And a handful said, are you Santa Claus? we think those were misaddressed. But we're back.
Yes,
we're back.
We are very, very happy to be back. And by the way, we're not going anywhere. We do this in our time when we can find it. We have no plans on shelving this podcast. And, so hopefully we can start recording again on a regular basis.
Yeah, and because it's been so long, there have been a lot of things happening across the country.
Yeah, we picked a bad time to take a break, right?
I know, lots been going on. So what we're going to do today, we are going to give you guys just a legal roundup of just a recap of a bunch of things that are going on currently and have been kind of building for a while.
Roundup, you know, kind of like just get out your lasso and your cowboy boots, and we're going to head on down to the OK Corral to talk about some laws, yeah, some trials, right?
Yeah, we're definitely not talking about the stuff you spray and get cancer.
What?
Roundup, you know, they just lost multiple lawsuits.
I did not know what you meant at first, but now I do, and it's funny. Not the fact that they, you know, poisoned a bunch of people, but yeah, Roundup. Nice one, Russ. Well, why don't we start with kind of a big one? So what we normally do is we focus on one or two cases. We're going to kind of do a shotgun approach today and cover a bunch of different things, kind of high level, just to recap what some of you may have already seen, but what you also may have missed. One of those is the case of Anand Syed. Y'all remember the Serial podcast, right? I'll bet if you're a listener of this podcast, many of you have probably listened to Serial. Russ, did you ever listen to it?
Probably the vast majority have listened to Serial. I am actually one of the very few who have not listened to it, but I have tons of friends who have, and I'm familiar with it.
Yeah. I was transfixed by this, as were a lot of people back when this podcast came out. Serial was a podcast that I believe was sponsored by NPR, or the makers of the podcast This American Life. Anyway, it chronicled the case of Anand Syed, who had been in prison for the murder of a woman named Haymin Lee, who was Anand's high school girlfriend. She was murdered back in 1999. And this was a very high-profile prosecution. He was convicted of her murder, but it was there were a lot of issues with the prosecution. Some journalists started looking into this years after he was convicted. His defense attorney passed away shortly after he was convicted, so there were a lot of missing records about his defense. But long story short, due to the work of a lot of people, and in no small part due to the Serial podcast, which raised awareness to this case, Anand Syed walked out of jail just about 2 months ago after being exonerated for this murder. This had been something that had been in the pipeline for a long time. After the Serial podcast had been published, his defense team started filing motions for new trial based on newly discovered evidence. And the Baltimore State's attorney actually did their own investigation and indicated that there was actually a lot of shady stuff that happened in the prosecution. I mean, the state's attorney's office said that they withheld evidence from the defense team.
Yep.
They issued an apology. This never happens, Russ. A DA gets in front of the cameras and the media and said the following: as a representative of the institution, it is my responsibility to acknowledge and apologize to the family of Hyman Lee and to Adnan Syed.
And you really have to tip your hat to them. This has been happening more and more. For anyone who listens to our podcasts regularly, we have done one in the past on DNA exonerations. This happens, people. People get convicted wrongly, and they're almost always, or like one of the number one reasons why that happens is prosecutorial misconduct right. in some way. And tip of the hat to the state for opening this up again. And more states are actually forming whole divisions where they're reviewing old cases to see if there were problems with prosecution.
Right. Yep.
Because, you know, it happens, and it happens far more often than people would think.
That should be a mandatory position in every district attorney's office. Someone who should just be making sure, did we get it right? And, you know, I will give credit to the state's attorney's office, but I'll tell you what, it makes you wonder, if there was no podcast, would this guy still be behind bars? I think the answer is yes. And it's a scary thought, because you think of all the people out there whose cases aren't being put out there in the national spotlight. So
what we need is more podcasts.
We need more podcasts.
So everyone out there listening,
hey, we're doing our part.
Right. We're doing our part, and you're doing your part. You're listening.
All right. Russ, what's next on our docket today?
So we have a bunch of Me Too cases
right.
that are coming to a head.
Like right now, we're going to get into a few of them. But what's the first one?
So first one we're going to talk about is good old Kevin Spacey. Mm-hmm. Kevin Spacey, an incredible actor. He's been in so many movies.
Two-time Academy Award winner.
Yeah, he is an exceptional actor by the accounts that are out there right now. He is a creepy, child molesting, sexual deviant.
He is currently embroiled in a trial after a lawsuit was filed by Anthony Rapp, who alleges that when he was, I believe, 14,
yes,
that Kevin Spacey sexually assaulted him.
And Anthony Rapp, for anyone who doesn't know, he's an actor, and he's not nearly as well known as Kevin Spacey, but for anyone who watched the newer Star Trek series Discovery, he's one of the main characters.
I'd like to go back to Adventures in Babysitting, one of my favorite films.
Was he in that?
He was the redhead dude who goes along with his buddy, and, you know, they just...
I did not know
mayhem
that.
Mayhem ensues, yeah.
So
movie still holds up, by the way. I watched it with my kids. They loved it.
It's on my list, actually, to watch with the kids. All right, so Anthony Rapp comes and years later, decades later, says, yes, he basically attempted to sexually assault me. I got away and got out of there. Never reported it at the time. Mm-hmm. But he recently filed this $40 million lawsuit, and it's based on that sexual battery. So he's essentially claiming emotional distress from this. Now, the reason why it's not a criminal case is because the statute of limitations has run on this
right.
because it's so old. Now, he's claiming things like, you know, I've been more and more distressed. Eventually, I got PTSD from right. this. I watch Kevin Spacey movies, and I can't handle it anymore. Interesting fact, back in 2017, when these allegations came out, Kevin Spacey issued a public apology to Rapp.
I hope we were going to talk about this, because this was such a bad move. And Kevin Spacey just testified. I just read, and he talked about this was a huge mistake
yes.
for me to apologize. He
got pressured. He said right. he got pressured into it by his publicist, by his journalist, and the lesson he learned is never apologize for something you didn't do.
Let's talk about the statement just for a second, though, because this would have been something, if he had a defense attorney, his defense attorney would have cringed. Basically, his statement, which came out very, very quickly. I almost wonder if he wrote it himself without anybody checking in with them, because he basically said, well, I don't remember this incident, but if it happened, I was super, super, super drunk, and right. my behavior was inexcusable. It was like, well, I didn't do it, but
if I did,
here's why. And like I said, I think that statement got him in a lot of trouble. I don't think he's made a really major movie ever since then. But 5 years later, I think he was one of the first Me Too,
people caught up,
whatever
in
you call
right.
it. Yeah, I mean, people caught up in this movement, and then there was a cascade afterward. But this was one of the first ones.
Was he before Weinstein?
I want to say that kind of happened around the same time. Yeah. I remember reading about it, and I remember kind of feeling, wow, this is crazy. And then more and more actors started getting caught up in this.
Well, and it's worth saying, so his exposure here is this $40 million, and the defense has largely been basically saying he's not emotionally damaged from this.
Right.
Because it's a civil trial. Right. You know, you don't have to really prove whether or not it happened.
Yeah, it's not a criminal trial. It really matters too.
Right. But Kevin Spacey is, just of note, in England, he is facing criminal sexual assault charges.
Exactly. So this is just one of many cases that Kevin Spacey is dealing with. So we shall see what happens with this lawsuit.
And closing arguments are maybe going on right now. So we're probably dropping this podcast on Friday. We're recording it on Thursday. So by the time you guys listen to this, there may be a verdict in this.
Okay. All right. So we're going to cover more Me Too cases in a minute, but let's talk January 6th for just a second, because there is actually a very large federal trial that just kicked off a few days ago, involving a leader of the Oath Keepers, whose name is Elmer Stuart Rhodes. I think he goes by Stuart Rhodes. He's the founder of this militia group called the Oath Keepers. He and five other people are jointly undergoing a federal trial right now. And the main charge they are facing is seditious conspiracy. Okay?
Big deal. Big deal.
This seditious conspiracy is punishable by up to 20 years in prison. He's facing other counts as well. I mean, he could spend the rest of his life behind bars if he's convicted of this, as well as his co-defendants. We've talked a little bit about some of the other January 6 cases. Most of them were, relatively speaking, minor in comparison to these charges.
Right.
I mean, a lot of those people were just charged with basically trespassing the Capitol. You know, they had to serve some jail time, a couple of months here and there.
Yeah, the worst ones were trespassing with a weapon.
Exactly. This is a whole nother ball of wax. And I'm just going to read right from the Department of Justice Office of Public Affairs, which summarizes essentially the indictment against these guys. According to the seditious conspiracy indictment, the defendants conspired through a variety of manners and means, including organizing into teams that were prepared and willing to use force and transport firearms and ammunition into Washington, D.C., recruiting members and affiliates to participate in the conspiracy, organizing trainings to teach and learn paramilitary combat tactics, bringing weapons, supplies, including knives, batons, combat uniforms, tactical vests, helmets, radio equipment to Capitol grounds, and then, of course, breaching and attempting to take control of the Capitol in an effort, and this is what the government asked to prove, in an effort to prevent, hinder, and delay the certification of the Electoral College vote by using force against law enforcement officers while inside the Capitol, and after January 6th, to continue the plot by opposing the lawful transition of presidential power. That's right out of kind of the charging document. That's a summary of what these guys are accused of. We've seen this approach before, Russ. We have people on the bottom flipping up on the people on top.
Right.
So there's going to be the government is eliciting a lot of testimony from people who have already pled guilty to lesser charges. Yep. These are former Oath Keepers who are basically saying, yeah, it was absolutely this man's purpose and his co-defendants to overturn the election and to thwart this, the presidential election from being certified.
Yeah, and there's a lot. Right. Yeah, by force. And there's a lot of circumstantial evidence here. Like, they didn't bring all these guns to the Capitol, but they had them right across the river. Right.
That's one of their defenses. They're saying, wait a minute.
It's legal.
What did we do wrong?
Right.
These are people who are simply exercising their Second Amendment rights to bear arms.
Right.
I think one of the defenses I've seen floated is, we were standing by as a militia in case President Trump initiated the Insurrection Act, which is essentially this 150-year-old law where the government can deploy the military against its civilians. So they were saying, we were just kind of getting ready for that. But we'll see. This is going to be a long trial. We're probably not going to have an outcome on this for probably an additional 6 weeks or so.
Right.
So we'll do an update for you later on this one. But it's a big one.
Yeah, it's a big one, and it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But let's get back to some Me Too stuff, right?
Let's do it.
So anyone out there a fan of That 70s Show?
I'm raising my hand.
I can tell you, I really liked that show.
I did too.
Like, that show ran for 8 years. That was a popular show. Ran, I don't have the exact years. I think it was 98 to 2006.
I think that's actually correct. Yes. I looked it up right before we got on. Yeah, they're planning a reboot, that 90s show.
That 90s show, I heard that. But that's where, like, Ashton Kutcher made his name.
Right.
This is...
Mila Kunis?
Yes. Yeah, her as well. So this was a popular show. For anyone who hasn't seen it, I mean, it's a funny show. But so Danny Masterson was one of the main characters on that show. He is currently in trial for 3 counts of rape. And those go back to 2001 to 2003, kind of when he was at the height of his fame. Now, there is a lot to unpack. There's a lot going on with this trial. The one, like, really interesting thing in this is, so the 3 alleged victims are his prior longtime girlfriend, a prior longtime friend, and then an acquaintance. Those are the 3 people. All 3, plus Danny Masterson, were all members of the Scientology Church at the time. Scientology is all over this case. Danny Masterson's prior attorney, he had a previous attorney before trial who tried to basically make Scientology a big deal about the case. Mm-hmm. His new attorney is trying to keep Scientology completely out of it, where the prosecution is trying to bring Scientology in. And the judge is basically letting some information about Scientology come in, but not a whole lot.
I think the reason that Scientology is creeping its way into this trial, almost to an unavoidable degree, is that this is a church like other churches actually out there, where
it's not like other churches.
In this respect,
okay,
they want the personal matters of their members,
yes,
to air out their problems inside the church,
right?
Like, okay, you're having a problem with your spouse at home due to domestic violence. Don't go to the police. Come to us. We're going to deal with it internally with the church. Okay, that's what I meant. Yeah. And this is a very big deal with Scientology. I mean, I'm not a Scientologist. I'm not going to pretend like I know everything about it. But, you know, I have seen some of these documentaries, like with Leah Remini and some of these detractors from the religion. And you've seen that your personal life is very much handed over to this church.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, there's really no aspect of your personal life that you're allowed to keep from them.
It's subservient to the church.
Yeah, and of course, one of the big criticisms of the church is that they use that information against people who later break from the church.
Well, here's how this went. 2 of the alleged victims reported this to the church at the time, and then they were unhappy with how Scientology handled it. And now part of that may be because, you know, Scientology is kind of a pay-to-play church, right? If you want to rise through the ranks of Scientology, you better have some cash on the barrelhead.
Right.
Like, I think it's $200,000 you have to submit to the church in order to get access to, like, their higher level documents.
Who knows? Maybe we can have Tom Cruise on the show. I don't know.
I mean, those are the documents that actually have the map to the planet where Scientology actually began.
Oh.
So you can find this stuff on the internet, or you could pay $200,000 and get it from the church.
I'm going to go right now and do that.
I'm
sold.
Yeah. But so they went and they talked to the church. Church did not handle it how they wanted to. One of these victims went to the police, and the police at the time decided that they did not have enough to file charges. I mean, these charges are tough.
Yeah, I think, Russ, I think you said it, but just to make sure, this is a criminal case. We've been talking about some civil cases. This is a criminal case. Danny Masterson could go to prison if he is found guilty of really any of these violations.
Absolutely. Like, and he's looking at a decades long jail sentence if he's convicted. But it's a tough case. Like, the girlfriend, he's had a long time relationship with the girlfriend at the time. They were in a long time committed relationship, and they were in bed together, asleep, and then she alleges that she woke up to him on top of her. That is a tough count to prove.
Objectively speaking.
Right, objectively speaking. And then the fact that nothing happened, I mean, 2016 is when one alleged victim connected with his ex-girlfriend. They started talking. That's when they eventually filed the police report. So you're talking about 12 to 15 years after the alleged incident before two of the three went to the police, and that's a problem for the prosecution.
And
it's not insurmountable.
Well, and let's be clear about that. I mean, I think one thing that the Me Too movement has reinforced is that there really isn't a time period that that goes by where a lot of these cases. We're talking about allegations that happened years and years and years ago. And I think there used to be a thinking, well, if it happened so long ago, why wasn't this reported? Well, one thing that Me Too has done is they've shown a myriad of reasons why victims are afraid or reluctant to come forward.
Right.
You talk about a case involving Scientology. I mean, if you go forward with this allegation and make it public and essentially involve the church in it, do you think they're going to want any part of that?
Right.
No. And this is a church that's been very, very... publicly accused of shaming detractors, of shaming ex-members, of going after them personally. Like, you can understand why there might be reasons, certainly in a case like this, why a victim may be reluctant to report it.
And for those reasons, a lot of states are rolling back the statute of limitation for sex offenses.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. So, like, Kevin Spacey, statute of limitations ran already. For Danny Masterson in California, yeah, it's still well within it. And I know that a lot of states are saying there's going to be no statute of limitations for Cosby, sex offenses.
That was totally unrelated, but that was another case that highlighted why statutes of limitations in sexual assault cases are really not practical.
Right. So fun fact on the Danny Masterson before we move on, right down the hall in the same courthouse, guess who's on trial?
Who?
Harvey Weinstein.
Wait a minute. Isn't he already in prison?
He is. He's serving a 23-year sentence out of a New York conviction, but this is L.A.
Okay. So, L.A. wants a piece of that pie too, huh?
Well, and part of the reason why L.A. wants a piece of that pie is because he's appealing his case in New York right now.
Right.
And if that appeal is successful, then he may be getting out.
Yeah.
And so he's not getting out if he has another case in another conviction in L.A. And just talking, just because we touched on appeals in the L.A. case, prior bad acts evidence is coming in. Evidence of other times when people say he has done similar things.
Yeah.
That's not always admissible at trial. There's a separate hearing where the judge decides if that comes in or not. That's coming in this case. And that right there is going to be fertile grounds for an appeal if he goes down on this case.
Yep.
So, I mean, Harvey's going to be fighting this probably until he dies. He's not looking good. He's in a wheelchair.
He's
probably
going to... He's not going anywhere.
No, he's not going to make it long enough.
I'm just going to go... I'm pretty sure Harvey Weinstein's going to die in prison. If I could take that to the sports book right now, I would. Yeah. But
What's the over-under?
In terms of years?
Yeah. 18 months, I'm saying.
I don't know how I feel about gambling... on a person's death. But in this case, with this creep, I'll do it. Yeah, I'll say over under is 5 years.
5 years? Yeah. Okay. I'm going to take the under.
All right. Speaking of taking, let's take a quick break because we have a guest on today's podcast. We're going to play Is This Legal? And on the other side, we're going to talk about some more cases. We'll be right back.
Today's guest on Is This Legal is Joseph Roulier. He is the second oldest of the Roulier boys. Our loyal listeners have already heard from his older brother, Phil, who called out his youngest brother, John. And then you heard from John, who called out Joe. So we are working our way through the Roulier crew. Joseph graduated from Miami University of Ohio in 2016 with a degree in economics. Fun side fact, Miami of Ohio was my second choice, and I also graduated with a degree in economics.
No one cares.
After that, we took different routes. Joseph worked in market research as a consumer insights manager for over 5 years. He's currently attending the full-time MBA program at Vanderbilt Owen Graduate School of Management. Now, although I didn't specifically ask for his drink preferences, He wanted me to let all the listeners out there know that he enjoys espresso martinis, mojitos, and Moscow mules. So if any of you see Joseph at the bar, you'll know what to buy him. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Russell. Thank you for having me, Colin. That was a very important ad as part of the bio.
Right. No, you need to have that out there.
It's good to see you, Joe. Thanks for carving time out of your day, man. How's everything in that's Nashville, right? If you're in Vanderbilt?
Yep, that's Nashville. Everything's going really well here. It's starting to the weather's starting to change, so we're getting some beautiful fall weather. Everything's going really well. How's everything in Denver?
Everything in Denver's great. We've had really good weather ourselves. You know, it's fall here. It's a nice time getting ready for Halloween. So things are just okay right here in my city.
Everything's been going great except for the Broncos. Sorry, Colin. I didn't mean to poke that open wound.
Yeah, let's ride. What else can you say?
Right. All right. So Joseph, I mean, you're in the MBA program. You're on your way to becoming a titan of industry. And we actually have an is this legal that might be right up your alley. And okay. it was just a happenstance. So you've listened before. You know how this works. I'm going to go through this scenario, and then you're going to tell us what your opinion is on the legality of whatever question I pose.
Sounds great. I'm excited.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
Been excited to play for a while now, so I'm excited to get my chance.
All right, perfect. Well, I mean, don't let your brothers down, because so far, I believe we're 2-0 with the brothers, so you do not want to be the first one to fail, Joe.
No, not at all.
All right, well, here we go. One night, Jebediah was tipping into his moonshine stock, and he had an epiphany. He decided he needed a clean break, a fresh start, a new beginning, if you will, and I know you will. He had finally had enough with all of the drama with Cornelius. He decided he was going to pull up his roots, move out of town, and make a clean start somewhere far, far away. Now, it just so happens that this is one of those rare times when he and Cornelius were getting along, and Cornelius was with him in his moonshine shack. Jebediah told Cornelius that all he needed to start his new life was some capital, which he was hoping to get by selling his wagon wheel business. Cornelius, always on the lookout for a deal, offered him $1,000 to buy his business. Jebediah agreed, and they took a pull from the jug to commemorate their deal. Now, the next morning, Cornelius came by Jebediah's place bright and early with cold, hard cash in hand. Jebediah, however, decided that a measly $1,000 for his hard-earned business didn't look nearly as good in the light of day. He figured he could get Myrtle to pay at least $2,000, so he told Cornelius the deal was off. Now, Cornelius did not take kindly to that. He turned around, marched straight to the local magistrate, and filed a lawsuit against Jebediah for breach of contract. Will his breach of contract claim be successful?
Very, very interesting situation we have here.
Feel free to talk it out.
Yeah. So we're dealing with contract law. Jebediah versus Cornelius. Can a contract be valid? I think the main point is that both were well into their moonshine at this point. So they are not of sound mind, I would imagine. So I'm leaning towards there is... So Cornelius filed the lawsuit for breach of contract. I'm leaning towards that breach of contract would not be valid because there was no legal contract in the first place, because they were both not of sound mind. It would be... Okay.
So let's back it up a little bit, and let me just give you a little more information, because you're on the right track for sure. Okay, but let's say right now, for purposes of this initial hypothetical, let's say
They had been drinking some moonshine, but they had not had an excessive amount. Okay. Gosh. So they had had some moonshine, but they were not drunk. They were not out of it. They still knew what was going on.
So it's just a verbal agreement at this point.
Yes.
I still don't think that a contract has been made. I feel like a verbal agreement is not enough to realize that transfer of $1,000 in title. So I'm going to say it's still not a valid breach of contract.
Okay. Colin?
Well, I am actually struggling with this as a judge here, because I think he actually nailed the correct answer initially when he talked about...
Love it, Colin.
I mean, the guy's drunk on moonshine. How can he form a contract, Russ? You put it right in the hypothetical.
Right. Here's what he did. He jumped ahead to my follow-up question, which was going to be, he was too drunk. He was drunk on moonshine. He was 3.5 sheets to the wind. And with that follow-up, Joseph, you were correct. Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
I'll take it.
But there's a but.
Yes. There is a but. I'm sensing a but.
So, again, I'm gonna blame Russ there for a very, I guess, ambiguous presentation of facts, but since alcohol was involved. But I think what Russ was getting at, like just taking in alcohol, like if he said, hey, I offer to buy the wagon wheel shop for $1,000. If Jebediah says, yes, I accept your offer, it's a done deal. Okay. That is a contract. And at that point, it doesn't matter that Cornelius had yet to hand over the $1,000. What matters is that that Cornelius promised a certain amount of money. It was accepted by Jebediah, and therefore you have a contract. So Jebediah would not be allowed to back out of that contract and resell it to Myrtle. That's our take on it. But you absolutely did isolate it, the fact that alcohol was involved here. And if parties are drinking, you have to be of sound mind when you enter into a contract. In fact, in our world, criminal defense law, a judge, before taking any plea, is going to ask the defendant before him, hey, are you under the influence of anything today? Have you taken any drugs? Because a guilty plea is actually a contract. You're agreeing to do certain things, and the state's agreeing to do certain things if you plead guilty. So I think this is a win. I'm going to give it to you. Congratulations. The Roulier boys are still undefeated.
I'll take it. Love that.
Yeah, and like the bottom line, it doesn't have to be written. Contract does not have to be written. There just has to be an offer, acceptance, and what's called consideration, which is something of value. So
or the promise of something of value.
Promise of something of value. So the promise of $1,000 and then an offer and acceptance by the two parties, that's enough as long as they were not too tipsy on that moonshine.
We're seeing this kind of happen with Elon Musk and Twitter. Remember, he kind of was like, he said, hey, I'll just buy Twitter. And Twitter was like, okay, you got a deal. Buy us. And now he's trying to back out of it. This is kind of along those lines. We're going to see what happens. A lot more lawyers are involved on this one, though.
Yeah, it's a very interesting situation. Yeah, we'll see what happens. See if...
Joseph, are you going to go out there and start making all sorts of contracts, like at the bar, like over an espresso martini, maybe?
Absolutely.
Well, Joe, wrapping up, is there anything that you want to plug? Any of your anything near and dear to your heart that you want to give a shout out to? Anything like that?
I'd love to give a shout out to just the MBA class of 2024 at Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's
I assume they're all loyal listeners of this podcast.
They will be.
They will be, exactly.
Awesome, Joe. Well, it was a pleasure having you on, man. You were a great guest. Very analytical. I liked your reasoning. I liked the way you talked out your answer. And thank you so much for being on our show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Joseph. It was fun, and we look forward to seeing you again.
Absolutely. Take care.
Welcome back, everyone. And just to let you know, we are going to get Roulier brother number four on one of these future podcasts.
Yeah, but he has no choice at this point.
Right, exactly. The gauntlet keeps getting thrown down. But for now, Colin, who do we have next that we're going to cover?
We're going to talk about Alex Jones. He's been in the news a ton this whole summer. I'm going to unpack this a little bit because, you know, again, what are we dealing with? Is this a criminal case? Is this a civil case?
Who's Alex Jones?
Alex Jones is a conspiracy theorist.
Very conservative radio host.
Yes, and he's been on the air. He's got a show called InfoWars. It's been on the air for a really long time. And the focus of this case, it is a defamation lawsuit. We've talked about defamation a few times on this podcast.
Yes.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, make sure you take a look at Take a Gander at the slander, which is by far, I think, our favorite legal title to a podcast.
It's a really good one.
Anyway, so what he did is he made just many, many statements on his radio show questioning whether or not the horrific school shooting of Sandy Hook Elementary, he basically questioned whether or not those events actually happened, indicated that the family members who lost their kids in that massacre were paid crisis actors. Basically, he argued that the whole shooting was a hoax in order to get public opinion against Second Amendment rights. All right. And really ugly stuff, to be perfectly frank.
With no evidence.
No evidence. I mean, it's just disgusting behavior. Well, the family members of the Sandy Hook massacre were not amused by this at all. In fact, they've gone through hell, Russ. I mean, Alex Jones, his listeners would harass these family members, these people who lost their kids in a school shooting. Alex Jones is having his listeners harass these people, showing up at their door, you know, just doing horrible things to torment these families. So, They sued him for defamation. They're basically saying, okay, you say I'm a crisis actor, you just defame me, you prove it. And Alex Jones, there were actually three separate defamation trials. One happened earlier this summer, just a couple of months ago. It happened in Texas. There was a lot of, this was a filmed trial, so there was a lot of courtroom footage about what was going on. There's many moments of Alex Jones. He testified in that case, just kind of looking like an asshole, frankly. But he lost that suit, was awarded $45 million.
The families
who sued him were awarded $45 million. And then that wasn't it, though, for him. There was a second defamation suit that just concluded a little over week and a half ago. And in that defamation suit, it was a consolidated case involving three separate families of victims. They just obtained, Russ, a $965 million award.
I mean, pocket change for Alex Jones.
Anyone. Yeah. And so that was a huge loss for Alex Jones. We're going to see what he tries to do to avoid paying it. I don't know, what bankruptcy laws he's going to try and take advantage of, but he's probably going to appeal it all the way. But, you know, bad day for Alex Jones. He's basically, between the two verdicts, he's got over $1 billion of damages that he, through his company, needs to pay these victims. So
that has to be one of the largest awards in history.
Yeah,
it's got to be way up there.
Well, and I'm frankly very, very happy about that one, and I wish there could have been more. So, Russ, what's next? Who else do we need to talk about?
So, we're going to talk about Igor Danchenko. Igor Danchenko just this week was acquitted of four criminal counts in a federal trial. Now, this is,
I don't know that name at all.
Yeah, this is not one that was super high on people's radar, but it was a big trial. This was a prosecution that stemmed from an independent investigation by Special Prosecutor John Durham, who was appointed by Bill Barr under the Donald Trump administration. He was appointed to investigate any law enforcement misconduct that happened when law enforcement was investigating the Trump-Russia probe during the 2016 election. If you guys go back to 2016, you remember there were allegations that the Trump administration was working with Russia to try to win that election. So Bill Barr appointed this guy to see if there was misconduct on the part of law enforcement. Igor Danchenko was the analyst who was largely responsible for the discredited Steele dossier. This may ring a bell for people. This was a dossier on Trump, and he was the source, or he collated the sources to produce this dossier. Ultimately, this dossier and the links between Trump and Russia in this dossier were never able to be confirmed. So this dossier was discredited, okay? But the criminal case stems from the FBI interviewing this guy. This is the analyst who mostly put it together. And they interviewed him, and they basically said he lied to us on multiple occasions.
And lying to federal investigators in particular is a huge, huge offense.
It's a big deal. He was certainly looking at years in federal prison from this. So, but this was an incredibly weak prosecution. You know, in the past, we've said, you don't want to mess with the federales.
Right.
You know, they
stand by that.
Yeah. I mean, generally 99% of the time, their cases are buttoned up. This case, incredibly weak.
Yeah.
It was so weak, Colin, that he had five charges initially. The judge threw one out halfway through the trial.
Yeah.
They basically said the prosecution hasn't even put enough evidence forward from which a reasonable jury could find him guilty.
Right. It's called, I think in civil cases, a directed verdict. Anyway, that's where the judge halfway through the trial, we lawyers call it halftime. Lawyers for the other side can make a halftime motion saying, hey, they just had the burden of proof. They didn't prove their case. And Russ, what are you telling me the judge did on some of their counts?
The judge kicked one of five, said, and it comes, it's a motion for judgment of acquittal.
Right.
And the judge says, yes, I find this one charge. You haven't even produced enough evidence to go forward on it. The other four, the judge said, it's a very close call, but I'm going to let the other four counts. Right. And judges never say that.
No. Russ, have you ever had a charge kicked at halftime? I don't know if I have. I've asked for it every trial. It's malpractice if you don't, but
I never have.
Yeah, I don't think so. It's very, very rare.
It's very, very rare. And
especially on a federal case, I would say too. So.
Yes. So the jury, you know, the jury were, so here's just a couple of quick examples, but like they basically said, oh, he lied. He said he had a conversation with this other guy and they never spoke. Well, there was evidence that they had an email exchange.
Okay, so he told the police, I had a conversation with him. The police were able to figure out, well, they never actually spoke to that email conversation. They based the phrase conversation on that email exchange.
Right. I mean, really weak stuff. Yeah. The jury spoke after the verdict. They took 9 hours, but they spoke after and they said, no, we are pretty much all in agreement from the beginning. We just wanted to be thorough.
Yeah, okay.
And so acquitted all counts. Really, it was kind of a little bit of a black eye for John Durham and that independent investigation.
Yeah, a little bit. All right. Well, Russ, so one more Me Too case, perhaps?
Let's hear it.
All right. So have you ever heard the name Paul Haggis?
Haggis, delicious.
Yeah, right? I just want to get some right now. Big bowl of Haggis. Well, you may not know that name, but I'm willing to bet you've heard of the movies Crash, Million Dollar Baby, Casino Royale, A Quantum of Solace. So Paul Haggis is a very prominent Hollywood screenwriter and director. And guess what? He's also a Scientologist, Russ.
Yeah, well, he's in from Hollywood. I mean, what are the percent? I want to know the percentages on this. Like,
I mean, I didn't know this was going to be a Scientology podcast, but I got to say, like, I am amazed, kind of, as a guy who follows this stuff, just how many controversies this church seems to be able to weather. I mean, they've got documentary after podcast after detractor just coming out and trashing this church. And from what I can tell, it's stronger than ever.
They have different governments all over the world who have ruled against them, who have found civil damages, who have found that they are like infiltrating police. Like, it's crazy. You're right. It's crazy that they're still going strong.
Yeah, they are. Well,
Tom Cruise will not be shaken. That's what I'm saying.
So here are the allegations, and I'm going to come back to Scientology in just a second. basically the this is an allegation. This is a criminal trial, by the way. Wait a minute. Hang on a minute. I think I'm getting confused. No, this is a civil trial. Pardon me. There's so many to keep track of. This is a civil case, not a criminal case. This stems from an allegation in 2013. The accuser is a female publicist, and she was working on a film premiere where Paul Haggis was a VIP guest. This was apparently in New York City. They attend this event. Paul Haggis invites her. He offers her a ride. They share a ride back to his apartment. He invites her up. They have a drink. And then she indicates that he sexually assaulted her, that he forcibly raped her. He indicates, no, we had consensual sex and she's just out to get money from me. Now, so that's what this trial is about. But again, this is not a criminal trial. This is a civil trial. Where does Scientology fit in?
Good question.
I actually don't know if it fits in or not, but there is speculation that because back in 2009, Paul Haggis, after being a member of the church for 35 years, suddenly backed out. It was around the same time when Leah Remini started talking about the church and how bad they were. He became a detractor. And again, we've talked about there's a well-documented history of Scientology going after people who attack it. And so they believe that this lawsuit, I should say Paul Haggis and some of his supporters believe that this lawsuit is actually somehow being bankrolled or being spurned by the Scientology church in order to further cause him havoc.
So let me just interject this right now. Church of Scientology, we're big fans and we wish you nothing but the best.
Critics, this is what we've heard. And to be honest, the church has denied any involvement in this case. Okay. This is just what's going around because it's Hollywood and that's what people are talking about. But nevertheless, he's basing a civil suit for his conduct back in 2013. And again, the allegations against him came out when a lot of the Me Too allegations were coming out.
Yeah, right.
I don't know how else to say that. So yeah, there you go. So there we go, Russ. I mean, a lot going on right now.
A lot going on. We'll try to give you updates on how all this stuff comes out. Just we'll do like a rapid fire speed round in an upcoming podcast.
Yeah, but Russ, I think it's time to have a little fun, right? It's been a long time since we've got to talk about someone really, really dumb.
I've been waiting for this for weeks and weeks.
It is time for DCOTW. It wouldn't be the same if it was just one U. It's got to be the W.
Dubja.
That'd be a different category. So, Russ, I think we're going to a new state. Not totally sure on this. We're going to the great state of Arkansas.
Yeah, I don't recall a prior one from Arkansas.
Yeah, so Razorback State, right?
Yeah.
A man named William Posternash was driving down a busy road in rush hour traffic, and unfortunately, he ran out of gas and was in a position where his car was completely disabled on this busy street, and he needed to push his car out of the way. I think we've all probably been there at one point in our life, kind of a stressful situation. Anyway, a police officer happened to notice what was going on. He saw the disabled vehicle, and he pulled in behind the car to redirect traffic away from the car and to assist. The officer actually did get out of his cruiser and help push the car over to the side of the road. This friendly officer even called a local tow company to assist in getting the car out of there. Officer's about to leave, but then he saw a couple of things that didn't pass the smell test, shall we say, Russ. The officer noticed that the car door lock had been broken. And then he saw that a screwdriver was sticking out of the ignition. The cop then decided to run the plate, and it turns out that this man, William Posternash, was a wanted serial car thief and was driving a car he had just stolen when the officer lent his helping hand. The previously helpful officer turned a bit more stern as he arrested Mr. Posternash for Grand Theft Auto, and because of his prior criminal convictions, he faces 10 years in prison.
Ooh.
So there you go. That's Arkansas's own William Posternash. What do we think about that?
I feel like I want to know how much gas there was in the car when he stole it.
I mean, obviously, Are you saying tip 101, never steal a car unless you know what the gas gauge says? Well,
I mean, if you're going to run out of gas like a mile down the road, that's a problem.
Right, right.
Like, but,
I mean, clearly there must have been a gas gauge that told the guy, oh, you're running low on fumes, dude. Maybe you shouldn't take Broadway.
Yeah, maybe head to the nearest gas station. I mean, although he, sounds like he almost got away with it. I don't know how...
I mean, a lot of this is more bad luck than right. being stupid. I guess the moral of the story is it's stupid to steal a car. It's super stupid to steal a car that's low on gas.
Yes. And it's really stupid to be a serial car thief because now he's looking at 10 years.
Yeah. Well, okay. So knuckleheads, Russ, where are you at on it?
You know, I do think that this falls more into unlucky. So I'm going to give him 3 on this one.
Okay. I'm going to give him 4 because he should have at least taken the screwdriver out of the ignition, right?
You're right. He didn't need it on at the time.
Like, oh, there's a cop behind me. Maybe I'm going to reach in and don't worry about this, officer. I'm just turning on the AC for the car that we're not in.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I'll give him 4. So I agree that kind of more bad luck, but he's still pretty stupid. Yeah. You know, next time take a side street, dude. Like you're gonna.
Next time don't steal a car, dude.
Right.
Like, or look at the gas gauge.
There's plenty of stupidity there.
There is.
All right. Well, again, sorry for the hiatus to our faithful listeners who may have been wondering what happened to us, but we're doing great. We're around, and we plan on producing much, much more of this content. So if you want to follow us, Russ, where can they do that?
You can find us on Facebook at Habits McCallan, on Twitter at Is This Legal Pod, or you can email us, and we have been getting some fan emails, so keep those coming.
Yeah, we're not lying about that. We were lying about the mailbags earlier.
Mailbags,
yeah.
Right.
Who writes letters anymore?
DenverCrimeLaw@gmail.com is where you can reach us via email.
Yeah, so we will see you on down the road. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Is This Legal? See you next time.